We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Millions of people are sick and tired of the endless wars, the poverty that is coming, the attacks of our civil liberties.
You are aware we are in an emergency situation.
We're about to have a disaster on our hands.
Millions of people
have to be sacrificed in order to save the whole.
I won't be a part of this.
You're not thinking about going back to that hell, are you? It's going to be riots.
If I go back, it'll be to get the only thing I want for myself.
You have to make them think that you are on their side. They need me alive, but they wouldn't think twice about hurting you.
To everyone within the range of my voice, this is John Galt speaking. Those who have left you are eager to build a world of freedom.
It's the end.
No, it's the beginning.
That's the trailer to Atlas Shrugged 3, based upon the novel by Ayn Rand. Ayn Rand is one of those philosophers that probably every philosophy student, every student of political ideas or political science at one point or another encounters, toys with, flirts with, maybe has a dance or two with, and then eventually realizes that, well, this stuff doesn't work. What good is a philosophy if it doesn't work? What good is a philosophy if it doesn't work for good but actually works for evil, if it actually makes things worse, not only in society but in individuals' lives? We're going to be talking about the results of Ayn Rand's philosophy, especially when mixed with the sexual revolution. Joining us to do that this Thursday afternoon, October the 2nd, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris, founding president of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Dr. Morse, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
When did you first encounter the philosophy of Ayn Rand, and why were you at that time especially ripe for the picking when it came to Ayn Rand's ideas?
Well, I think it must have been about my second year of graduate school, something like that. So I had completed an undergraduate degree in economics and was working on a doctorate in economics. And I was committed to free market economics, and so that part of what Ayn Rand had to say was, was kind of exciting. It was kind of exciting to see somebody dramatize some of the abstract economic points that I was used to making, you know. So that was appealing. But the other piece of it that was appealing is that she kind of gives you permission to do what you want, and that you need not be attached to any particular person. And there was a lot of turmoil in my family at that time, and I was married, but it seemed easier to me to kind of walk away from my mother and father, brothers and sisters, and everything that was going on there. And it seemed like Ayn Rand gave me permission to do that, you know. And so I have to admit, looking back on it, you know, I was 20 something at that time, that part of the appeal was the permission that I got to ignore people who were difficult in my life.
With just a minute or a minute and a half before we take our break, and we'll pick it up on the other side of the break, this was also happening at the time when the sexual revolution had a great appeal for you too, or at least it still had its lingering effects. Am I correct?
Oh yes, that's right. Absolutely. And she, you know, she has her kind of sizzling sex scenes in each one of her books. And the relations between the man and the woman are supposed to represent you reaching for your highest value. And so, you know, if this person is really a great heroic producer, achiever, great mind, you know, that type of a thing, then it's proper that you be attracted to them. It's proper that you act on that attraction, you know. And so that's, again, part of the appeal. There's a kind of Nietzsche Superman undercurrent to what Ayn Rand has to say.
Was it, with only about a minute here, was it Was it the enlightened self-interest, this, or the immaturity of youth saying, look, I know what's in my best interest, and now Ayn Rand has told me that it actually will, if I simply pursue that, will result in the best for me and for everyone else around me? Is that the appeal, in essence, here with about 30 seconds?
Absolutely. That was the appeal for me. You know, I have to admit that now. Of course, I wouldn't have said that at the time. You know, I thought this was, like, you know, my great self-interest, rightly understood. You know, Tocqueville would have called it self-interest, rightly understood. She called it rational self-interest, you know. But there's always, the interesting thing about this, the self-interest kind of argument, is you always need an adjective to go with it. You can't just have self-interest without any adjectives. You have to have something that modifies it so that you make it clear that you're not just acting on impulse. But the problem is, if you're immature, you can very easily paper over your impulses with one of those adjectives and tell yourself that it's all going to be good, whereas in fact it's, you know, any idiot can tell you it wasn't going to be good.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is our guest. We'll continue our conversation with her on the other side of the break, talking about the results of Ayn Rand's philosophy, telling her own story. She's founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason universities, and she's authored several books, including Smart Sex and Love in Economics. About another 10 minutes with her on the other side of the break. Then later in hour two of Issues, Etc., our Christ in the Old Testament series begins. Well, actually, it continues. Isaiah chapter 5, let me sing the song of my beloved. My beloved had a vineyard. We'll find out what that's all about a little later in hour two of Issues, Etc.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Say, live and let die.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. We're talking about the results of Ayn Rand's philosophy, especially when it's mixed with the sexual revolution. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is our guest. She's founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. A little bit later, our Christ in the Old Testament series with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer in Isaiah chapter 5. Dr. Morse, just tell us your story. You've told it recently in a blog post titled Ayn Rand in the Mind of an Impressionable 20-something. But tell us, give us the nutshell of how this kind of came into your life, and then what effects it had.
Well, you know, Todd, it's deeply embarrassing, actually. I wish I knew when to keep my mouth shut sometimes, honestly, but you know, I couldn't forbear from saying something about it, because, you know, I was married at the age of 20, and I was divorced at the age of 24, and part of what precipitated the divorce was the idea that, you know, I was looking for somebody bigger and better and greater. And I thought I was entitled to that. And, you know, so this kind of idea of, you know, being continually on the market or continually looking, Ayn Rand in effect fed into that, right? Because she's saying your sex life is about pursuing your highest value. Well, what is that? How do you know what that is? And if there are problems inside your family, it's just easier to walk away from the family. And of course, the whole sexual revolution has been about severing relationships, walking away from relationships, taking the exit option. And what we really needed was a love revolution, where people would say, okay, this is the person, these are my mother and father, these are my brothers and sisters, this is the family that I was given, I need to love them more, not walk away from them further, you know. And if you're married, you need to love that person more, not figure out some reason why to leave them, you know. And I didn't understand that in my 20s. I didn't understand any of that. And she fed right into that. And, of course, the whole sexual revolution fed right into that. So I ended up being divorced at the age of 24, which was totally my fault. I could have come up with a whole bunch of reasons to blame my husband, but it wasn't his fault. I can't really blame Ayn Rand either, but I have to say that these kind of cultural cross currents made it a lot harder to figure out what you're supposed to do, you know, that eventually I did have to learn that if you're going to have love in your life, you have to be prepared to give. And without counting the cost, without calculating, without doing a value-for-value transaction, which is the way Ayn Rand like to think of things. But if you think like that, you're not going to have any friends, much less have a husband.
There are some deeply troubling things about the entire approach there. I mean, we've mentioned one of them. That is the so-called rational self-interest, which really leaves the, as you said before the break, the adjective rational for the individual, it's not an objective rationality. It's whatever I consider to be rational, and then we can rationalize an awful lot of things in our life. But speaking more objectively about that philosophy, do you see the present day followers of Ayn Rand? She's got a lot of hangers on. She has some a kind of a relatively few devoted devotees, if you will. But do you see them offering real solutions to life's problems, to society's problems?
You know, I have to say I really don't. You know, one time I was at a meeting of academics, and it was libertarians and objectivists and conservatives and so on. It was that type of meeting. And there were probably, I don't know, 20 people in the room. And there was me and one other woman. And I looked around the room, and I realized that every one of the men in that room had been divorced at least once. Every one of them, with the exception of one guy who was kind of young. But all the guys who were, you know, 40, 50, 60s, that age grade, they had all been divorced at least once. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, whether you're an Ayn Rand person or some other kind of libertarian, this is not a good commercial for your way of life if you can't sustain a married life, if you can't sustain a relationship. And I think that what happens with people is that when you start this, you know, kind of rational self-interest, I'm doing what's in my interest, you know, line of thought, there's no end to that. And people don't realize how difficult they are to live with when they start talking like that, and when they start acting like that. You know, it's like, I'm telling you what I think because I'm entitled, because this is what I think, and you either have to put up with it, or if you want to be in a relationship with me. Well, those types of kind of small but regular ultimatums take a toll on any type of relationship. I just think it doesn't make people happy. I mean, that's just the bottom line. It doesn't make people happy. And that kind of approach that she had, I think, invited people to behave in those kinds of ways. Now, and I should say, you know, as soon as I put that up on Christian Post, a number of people chimed in and said, oh, no, you know, you're misinterpreting her philosophy and so on and so forth. And, you know, I really don't think I am. I really don't think you can salvage it by an appropriate redefinition of what's rational. You know, that's just my observation, and having been around a lot of people of that kind for a while.
I mean, one of the things that sealed it for me, and I got to admit I flirted with it when I was younger and probably far less realistic about life, and she tends to appeal to that. One of the things that sealed it for me was, quite frankly, her viewpoint of Jesus Christ. She basically says the guy's a loser, and deserved everything he got. And to me, I mean, even someone, regardless of political philosophy, someone who is willing to look at someone who is the epitome, even if you do not believe he's the Son of God, he is the epitome of self-sacrifice, and say, what a loser. I'm not terribly interested in anything else you got to say.
Well, you know, she, in that sense, you know, she really is a follower of Friedrich Nietzsche, in a sense, you know, because they're both saying that that Christianity is suspect because it encourages softness, it encourages weakness. They say it in somewhat different ways, but Nietzsche's saying, you know, that it's the slave mentality. It's the weak person who is propped up and protected by Christianity, and Rand is saying that the people who really count are the heroes, the heroic people, you know, and in a sense they're correct, but because most societies do not have the concern for the weak that Christianity has. Most societies do not care about the powerless and the weak and the victims. Most societies think, yeah, well, I'm big and tough and strong, and so I'm going to do what I want. You know, that's the way people like a strong horse. They back the fast horse. That's the normal human condition. And so what Jesus was trying to do was to transform the human person, but in a way that is consistent with who we really are. And so there really are two views of who the human person is. And Jesus reveals man to himself, as John Paul the Great always used to say. Jesus doesn't just reveal God to man. Jesus reveals man to himself. And so for us to see him and to see how he lived and realize that that's what's available to us, that's what it means to be a full person. That's what it means to be a happy person. That's what it means to be a great person. You know, a guy like Francis of Assisi saw that completely in Jesus and lived it in a very powerful way, or he's completely incomprehensible to someone like Ayn Rand or Friedrich Nietzsche, completely incomprehensible. And so the modern world has so much of this this kind of individualism. I want to be careful about using the word individualism, but there's a kind of individualism that we have that blinds us to real love, so that there's no place for love inside the modern world. And that just can't be a real world for real people to live in, because real people love and need to love and be loved. That's who we really are as persons. And I don't think Ayn Rand's persons are real persons.
When did you finally shake Rand off?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. It was kind of gradual, you know. I was never like a thoroughgoing objectivist. You know what I mean? It was never like that, like some of the fellows get to be. But honestly, by the time I had my first child, it became really, really obvious that the kind of libertarian individualism that was so much a part of my economics training generally, the birth of the first child, the adoption of the first child, those things made it abundantly clear that there was just a huge, big, gaping hole in objectivist theory and in libertarian theory. And the huge gaping hole is that every human person is born as a helpless infant. And that should tell us something about the human condition. Somehow, we have got to help that helpless infant become an adult. And if all you think about is value for value, I'm going to do something for you because you can do something for me, you won't have any kids. You really won't have any kids. It's never a good deal if you're calculating like that. And I think that's part of why the birth rate has dropped in the West, because it's not all Ayn Rand's fault, but all these different strands of individualism that we have going with us, all these different invitations to calculate the value of another person. You know, you look at it and say, well, nope, I'm not ready for kids yet. Nope. Cost-benefit analysis ain't there. Nope, not going to have a kid this year. Hey, maybe now I'm ready for a kid. Whoops, I'm 38. Can't get it done. You know, that's what's happening to us, you know. So there's a part of that. And she would, you know, I don't want to say she's a utilitarian because she wasn't, and that would be grossly unfair. But I'm just saying all of these different currents that are so much a part of modern thinking all push in the same direction of saying that children are either a complete nuisance that you should avoid, or there's some kind of consumption good. You kind of enjoy kids, then it's fine. But that isn't really satisfactory as an understanding of the human condition and the human person, because the fact is every person was once a child, once an infant, and we have to respect that in a more deep way than we do now.
One final question for you, and has to do with more or less the political philosophy that often feeds off of the ideas of Ayn Rand, and that is this kind of no skin off my teeth libertarianism, where I don't really care what happens, what anybody else does, as long as it doesn't directly affect me, doesn't affect my bottom line, be it emotionally, well-being, money, however, it's usually money. What do you make of that kind of political philosophy?
Well, the first thing to say about it is it's not a very attractive, appealing political philosophy. It doesn't win very many votes. You know, when the Republican Party tries to act like that, they get their bottoms kicked. You know, I mean, it's just not appealing as a political proposition to enough people that you can ever build a coalition around it. So that's the most obvious thing to say about it. The second thing about it is that it's almost always men who act like that and who talk like that. Women very seldom are drawn to that form of individualism or utilitarianism. And I've noticed this, you know, in my travels in various kinds of conservative groups. The only corner of the conservative movement that is reliably female is the social issues part of the conservative movement, right? So if you go to a pro-life meeting or a pro-marriage meeting or an abstinence education meeting, that'll be packed with women, just packed with women. But any other part of conservatism, particularly economics, foreign policy, Second Amendment stuff, all those different parts of the conservative coalition, they are predominantly men. And I think that the libertarian mindset, the minimum government philosophy, has really missed the boat in not understanding the significance of the family, both to a free society and to a smaller government society, and to appeal to women. So leaving the family out of the account, that's not unique to Ayn Rand. Not by any means is it unique to Ayn Rand, but it is a pervasive problem throughout the conservative movement, I would say, with the exception of social conservatives and religious conservatives.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California, and she taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's authored the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. You can read her blog post. It is titled Ayn Rand in the Mind of an Impressionable 20-something at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jennifer, thanks again for your time.
Okay.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer, host of a weekly radio talk show called Redeemer Theological Academy. Our weekly series with him is Christ in the Old Testament. We will turn to Isaiah chapter 5.
Hey, St. Louis, how would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Listen to what you want. When you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
No matter the size, big or small, RP Lumber can deliver it all. From pickups to one tons to box trucks and booms. Everywhere you look, you see blue. RP Blue. RP prides itself in customer service. RP will deliver quality products to your home, business, or job site. And you can be sure of timely delivery on clean trucks with courteous drivers. So when you think of service, think blue. RP Blue. With over 50 local community locations, for 37 years, RP Lumber.
Will your church be one of the Issues, Etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues, Etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues, Etc. 300, click the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues, Etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues, Etc. 300.